Looking for a fun way to win 25 times your money this football and basketball season? Test your skills on Prize Picks, the most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. Just select two or more players, pick more or less on their projection for a wide variety of stats, and place your entry. It's as easy as that. If you have the skills, you can turn $10 into $250 with just a few taps. Easy gameplay, quick withdrawals, and injury insurance on your picks are what make Prize Picks the number one daily fantasy sports app. Ready to test your skills? Join the Prize Picks community of more than 7 million players who have already signed up. Right now, Prize Picks will match your first deposit up to $100. Just visit prizepicks.com/play100 and use code play100. That's code play100 at prizepicks.com/play100 for a first deposit match up to $100. Prize Picks, daily fantasy sports made easy.
Hello and welcome to episode 56 of the Uncovered Podcast. I'm your host, Behram Kazi. You can find me at DefMango on Twitter. And with me, as always, is Jared Kimber.
HCL Tech presents this show. They're about Dartner and partnerships. Plus, they love cricket. So here they are.
So, Jared, Afghanistan have defeated Sri Lanka comprehensively in Pune by 7 wickets. They've won back-to-back World Cup games. And they now have 3 wins out of 6. And look, this squad is littered. Not littered, but it has a couple of really, really good cricketers, right? Some superstars in Rashid Khan, Rehmanullah Gulbaz, Mujib, Nabi. These guys have been around. They have IPL experience. They've played top quality cricket, right? But tonight it was Rehmat Shah who scored a 50, and then Azmatullah and Hashmatullah, they were unbeaten with half centuries till the end. And earlier in the game, Fazal Haq Farooqi took 4 wickets, right? So how amazing is it for Afghanistan that all of their squad players, more or less, are turning up when the occasion is as big as it can possibly get? And they've contributed to all 3 of their victories, which have been convincing. They haven't just been, you know, great escapes. They've been solid victories.
I don't think any of their players' batters have scored over 250 runs, and any of their bowlers have more than 10 wickets. Does that sound right? As I say it out loud, I think it's right. Unless someone went past one of those marks during the game, and I missed it today. But that is exceptional. It's a little bit terrifying, because if I was working as an analyst for them, I'd be like, kind of want 2 guys to have 350 runs at this stage. And I like one of my bowlers to have, you know, 11, 12 wickets. But it means everyone's chipping in. It's like the anti-England or the anti-Bangladesh, right? Where you're just like, do they have a player in form? Or you're just like, well, no. Afghanistan don't have anyone who is lighting this World Cup on fire. They're not winning because Rashid is taking wickets. Then they're not winning because Gurbaz is, you know, running right up the top or anything like that. Literally, like today, they were probably going to be a batter down when their wicketkeeper got his injury. We assume. We don't know if he's going to come in. But and even then, you're like, yeah, but they've probably got enough people to chip in now. And that's a huge change, right? And his batting saved them in one of those wins. No, look, it's excellent. The way that they might be ideally set up to be the sort of team that can chase those middle scores in a way that Bangladesh maybe was like that back in a similar period for them, where you're just like, yeah, because, you know, if you're South Africa, obviously, you have other issues when it comes to chasing. But if you're Afghanistan, you don't really have those kinds of worries. You just like, they must have known for generations they never had any good batting, right? Or top level international quality batting is what they never had. It would be hard-pressed now to say that they don't have that. Gurbaz is a proper talent, as you said. Then they've got, 4 other guys, maybe even 5 other guys who you just like, if those guys all average between 35 and 45, maybe slightly short strike rates for some of them, that seems perfectly reasonable and you know, would certainly help them. So it's an exciting time for them. And yet, in some ways, Behram, it's their least exciting time, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I suppose so, because the way they're playing, like, composed cricket, it is rather new. And like you mentioned, of course, Gurbaz is there, but I think Ibrahim Razadaran is really, really talented. We've spoken about him on previous Uncovered podcasts. And then Rehmat Shah had a strike rate issue, did not seem to have one today. And then also, you know, Hashmat, he's consistently gotten runs and he's their skipper. He's playing with responsibility.
We need a nick, because they've all got Matt in their name. I think that needs to be a thing. I think eventually they need to change the order slightly, because I'd like it if they had the triple Matt from 4, 5, and 6, just from an aesthetic point of view. But yeah, no, you're right. I mean, there's so, that's what I mean, you know. I mean, Ikram played one innings, started outside of this World Cup squad. I've been raving about him for 4 years. Like, when we're talking about probably Gabbar's as the one difference maker when it comes to strike rate, and then maybe a bunch of shy hopes. But to be honest, West Indies would take a bunch of shy hopes right now. At least they know they're going to score 250 to 300 a lot.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I think Azmatul Omarzai, actually, he had a successful stint with Peshawar Zalmi in the PSL as well. So I had my eyes on him. He's been really impressive. And pace bowling all-rounders, you know, they're akin to gold dust. So if Afghanistan can develop him into a good one, that would be great for them. Jonathan Trott, I read a headline today that he's taken the scenic route to coaching, which I think was quite funny. And yeah, they should probably build a statue for him in Kabul at this point. And then also Ajay Jadeja, apparently, and I was reading a tweet by someone that, you know, he's been hired specifically to talk to the Afghan batters about the mental side of things, right? So how important do you think contributions by both these two men have, how important have they been for Afghanistan?
Well, the way they're batting, you would have to give them credit. I think if you look between the cycles, there were trends that they were going in this direction anyway. So I think the chases and the way they chased, we will give credit to the two coaches. I think the overall lift in batting, you have to give to all of Afghanistan cricket and finding a bunch of these players at one time. Look, Trotty, I mean, I've known him pretty well, kind of towards the back end of his career, worked with us at Cricket Info. He's obviously very close with George Dobell, and you know, me and Trotty have a weird relationship. Do you want the weirdest Jonathan Trott story that I have?
Yeah, sure. Does it involve Mitchell Johnson?
It does not. No. So this is
Rocky. Okay, I'm interested.
So I used to be a comedy folk singer. Did you know that?
I did not know that.
There's
I knew about your parking cars story and, you know, you injuring your hand and then also your leg spin story. But no, this one, I don't know.
So I was a comedy folk singer and I was getting... I mean, serious. It was obviously it was a bit, but I had a big MySpace page and everything. And we made one video that was kind of very cool that we were very happy with. And then after that, we got other work and then cricket got in the way a little bit. So I never went back to it. But Jonathan Trott once watched one of those music videos in front of me. And it was just Trott like this. And then occasionally looking back at me and then Trotty's a proper cricket guy and it's properly in his head. He's got an incredible work ethic. Look, a lot of people don't get into coaching because coaching's hard, right? Like it is. I remember Gareth Batty saying to me that his days were longer as a coach than as a player. And he said it doesn't take quite the physical strain on you, although it can. Trotty's not averse to any of that, right? It's within him. Can he and any batting consultant, you know, because they might go through a few different batting coaches, but can they get to the point where they can also match that with a slightly higher strike rate or, you know, upskilling them a little bit? At that stage, they're a very, very interesting team. But this is fantastic. As I said, I don't think they've bowled as well as they can. And I don't think all their batters have had good tournaments, even if as a batting unit, I think they've had a very good tournament. So there should be room for growth within what we've seen.
Yeah, I know there's definite room for growth. And interesting story over there. Of course, we have some people in the comments, Amar, Ijaz, Darshan, Nihal Patel. Hello to all of you guys as well. And if you are watching, go and look for this video. Find this video of Jared singing. We'll make it famous or something. And we'll probably have a podcast to just have him sing for us. But more important question, Jared. 3 wins, 6 games, 3 to go. Outside chance of making the semis or nah?
The Bangladesh game is going to haunt them, I think. I think they're probably going to fall one short. So I just did the power list. I think they are a chance of winning 2 games. But if you told me they lost all 3 from here on in, I'd also be like, I could see that as well. Probably for them, the worst thing that's happened is Netherlands have also got their confidence right at the moment. Yeah. So I think they should finish. I think they should be saying, if I was Jonathan Trott, I'd be saying, look, we should finish with 4 wins minimum, right? So 4 wins minimum, we could do that. Let's go for 6. Let's just throw it all on the table and see. Against Australia, just pick every spinner, you know, make everyone bowl spin. And then against South Africa, hope the toss goes your way. And they certainly have the bowling attack to, they can put more pressure on South Africa than Pakistan did for sure.
Oh, no, absolutely.
I mean, you and I could put more pressure on the Pakistan.
For sure, absolutely. But I think, you know, the fact that they've defeated England and Pakistan, Sri Lanka, you know, all of them are former champions. They've lifted this trophy, and that will elevate Afghanistan's hopes as well, that they could probably beat at least one of South Africa and Australia, and then hope to beat the Netherlands as well, even though I think that might be a tight game. But let's go to Sri Lanka now. Let's talk about them a bit. You know, they might have lost tonight, but they did defeat England not too long ago, just, you know, this last week. And Pathum Nisanka and Sadira Samra Wickrama have scored consistent runs for them. Dilshan Madushanka has been a bit of a revelation with the ball, really. He's suddenly had a great World Cup. And Angelo Matthews is back. And he came and took wickets up front versus England, took two wickets, and then also forced a run out. And yeah, is it a bit comical, the whole Matthews situation? Are you a bit surprised that he's here taking wickets at the World Cup?
Oh, I mean, he should be surprised he's taking wickets at the World Cup. Everyone in the world who knows who he is should be surprised. So Estelle, who's joining our network very soon, but Estelle did the maths for me. And I think it was the second game. Their average age was 26. And they've managed to move that up over five games to 29. Which is quite the jump, really. Yeah. She was like, it's not that much. I was like, Estelle, that's huge. That's 3 years per person, right?
That's true.
You know, Karuna Ratner was in the side. I was like, I'd forgotten he was over there because they tried everyone else at that point.
I honestly did not understand why they played him today. Like, might as well just go with Kusal Pereira. Even if he doesn't get runs, if he does click, he could potentially win you the game.
Look, the one thing I would say is that I think I said after they lost their first two games that they should use this as experience for the World T20 in USA and West Indies. And I didn't talk to anyone in Sri Lankan cricket about that and what they were thinking. But I think they were thinking, all we need is a bit of a messy round robin stage and we can still get through. And I think they've been vindicated by that. However, they just played the average age of 29. That's a team in peak, right? And they got beat by Afghanistan, and they weren't really in the game after whenever Mendes went out. I can't remember when that was, but 24th over, 28th.
It was
over.
A double strike by Mujib that really, you know, got them.
Yeah, so Mendes tries to play the big slog sweep. He gets caught, fine. And then they just fucking gave up after that. They just didn't make any runs. Yeah. Other than Gurbaz's wicket, and maybe there was a little spell, maybe Chimura might have bowled it, where they looked okay. They never
bowled decently as well.
Was it Rajatha? It might have actually been Rajatha I was thinking about. I can't remember. It was one of the right arm seamers, bowled a really good little micro spell. And I thought, oh, maybe if they get a wicket here. But the point is, like, they've played an experienced team here, and Afghanistan have absolutely slapped the ass off them, right? So that's a horrible sign for Sri Lankan cricket. As you said, they won a game not that long ago. I thought, looking at their schedule, they would do okay in the middle and they would struggle at the beginning and the end. I still kind of feel that way.
Yeah. I mean, had they won today, you know, they could have dreamed to make the semis at least. Mm-hmm. But now I think that dream is pretty much over. And Champions Trophy qualification also might come in the mix. But we'll get to all of that fun stuff after a break because there's lots to discuss. You're watching Uncovered with Jared and Behram. And yeah, see you after this short break.
Brought to you by Wicket Cricket Manager. Own, control, strategize, play, compete, win and lose on Wicket Cricket Manager.
Hello and welcome back to episode 56 of Uncovered with Jared and Behram. And just before we get into, you know, more discourse, Ijaz Ali is over here and so is Ritwik Tiwari. You guys have got some questions, but we've got a lot to discuss. So if you really want your question answered, send a super chat and we will be sure to take it. All right, Jared, we were talking about how ODI cricket is on the back burner. And the Champions Trophy, which is scheduled for 2025, well, the ICC have announced that the top seven teams plus Pakistan from this World Cup will qualify. And all of a sudden now, the likes of England and Sri Lanka and Bangladesh are probably having some sleepless nights.
It's just ridiculous that we're suddenly in the middle of the tournament and they would announce that. Like, I've probably told this story before, but when we did Death of a Gentleman and they had, I think they had three media staff, the ICC, billion-dollar organization, three media staff. And one was doing, like, maybe the under-19 World Cup. Another one had a family bereavement and was back home in Pakistan. And the only person who was actually working was Usman Samiuddin's wife, who I think might have just, like, been a temporary person. And she had to do the big three takeover press conference, right? And So I understand they don't have a lot of staff if things go wrong. How the hell would they wait until this tournament happened? And also, like, it just seems like it's so bizarre that they're about to have a meeting about the future of ODI cricket, and yet they've already decided that the Champions Trophy is going ahead, and they've already decided what the format is. Mm-hmm. Shouldn't that be at the meeting they were about to have, if that is the case? It's just, I don't know what to do with this, Bayram. I don't know what to do with the information here. And also, let's say you come to a World Cup, and let's imagine England are being bad now because they're all injured. Not the case. I know they've had a couple of injuries, but it's not the case. But let's say they came to this World Cup and they just kept getting injuries. Maybe they got injuries on the day, and so that, you know, a bit like New Zealand, they could only pick three bowlers or whatever. You know, they're making Sam Curran bat at four, right? And then halfway through the tournament, they were suddenly told, oh, by the way, the next tournament you may not go to because of how bad you're being in this one. Like, it's just, it's pathetic in a sport of this size to be so stupid so consistently. And yet we manage it, mate. We manage it.
Yeah. I mean, it is really startling. You know, it's still a premier competition, and, you know, there is some history associated with the Champions Trophy. And, you know, I thought they might even scrap it or might make it T20, but they've announced mid-tournament that, hey, these are the teams that will qualify. And all of a sudden, things are looking bleak for, you know, a team like England who, you know, won the Moral Ashes. We've got to give them that. Big year for them. And then, I mean, now they're on the cusp of losing out on a spot in one of the major tournaments where they have created the game.
What do you think that I don't mind them losing out, because that's fine, but they should have known beforehand if they were going to lose, if they were going to lose out. But what do you think? There are some countries this would really bother them, but I wonder if it's going to make even much of a big deal. I'd be interested to know if England do end up as the ninth team, how the England media handle it and everything else. Because, you know, if this was Pakistan or Sri Lanka or India, Australia, you know, there are some countries that would be absolutely, you know, Bangladesh, they'd be furious, right? And Bangladesh might still be the furious one because they should finish last in this tournament the way they're playing.
Pretty much.
But, you know, I do wonder, like, what their reaction will be in England. I can't even put a finger on it, but, you know.
I can put a finger on it. They're going to say that it's a useless format. It's dying. There's no point. We've got to focus on test cricket.
I need to talk about that. That's really interesting because I've said the exact same thing as a bunch of English journalists. And people are suddenly like, oh, England, now they're not doing well in ODI cricket. I'm like, wait a minute, me, KSR, and you, to this, an Indian, a Pakistani, an Australian, before the tournament, we're talking about this, right? Yeah. And the round robin thing, everyone was talking about that in 2019, about how it was a stupid format. And everyone's been talking about bilateral ODIs suffering for, I don't know, since 2012. It's really interesting that the English press are getting attacked for having the same opinion as many people in many other presses around the world. But you're right. They'll be seen as whingers, and maybe some of them will whinge. I don't want to say they're not going to whinge. might want to wait for them to start whinging. I don't think they've been whinging so far. I think they were saying that this tournament is badly designed. It is. ODI cricket is struggling. It is. But you're right. But again, it's a Champions Trophy. It wasn't always called the Champions Trophy. It was cancelled twice. I think it's been cancelled. Certainly once it was completely cancelled. Mm-hmm. I think India Pakistan making the final in 2017 probably gave India winning it in 2013, and then India Pakistan in the final in 2017 gave it a huge boost, right? Mm-hmm. But do you know what, mate? No one has been commenting to me saying, "Oh, why didn't we have one in 2021?" And, you know, what's the future with the champion? No, and I get asked, I've been asked about fucking Sky's ODI record and Shadab Khan's bowling 40 times each. And no one has said to me, whereas back when I used to take the piss out of the Champions Trophy between 2010 and 2017, so many people, I can't believe you're talking down about our favorite tournament and all this sort of stuff. No one says that anymore. And so it has changed. I think the perception of it and the reaction to it has changed quite a bit.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I definitely don't miss it. And Pakistan is the defending champion, so I still don't miss it. I think the white coats are my only favorite fun part of that. I really do like the white coats, and the sight of Logan Van Beek and Bas Dileda dancing in a white coat is like, it's doing things to me, right?
Let's do it.
Happen. Who knows? But anyway, let's talk about England a bit more, you know, versus India. They look like they're back, even though they had a howler versus Sri Lanka. David Willey got Kohli for a duck and both Wokes and Willie, they took wickets up front. They both accounted for half of India's batting lineup. They took 5 wickets. Mark Wood and Adil Rashid looked good. And, you know, if you look at the past 2 games, however, England, none of their batters has crossed 50. And for a team which, you know, made its bread and butter by scoring 300 plus scores, when in the last 2 games, their scores combined don't add up to 300. And that doesn't make for great reading. So that's quite astonishing, no?
I think they're losing a wicket every 24 balls, which means that they're basically not going to cross 40 overs very often. As the way that, well, they're a 50-50 chance at the moment of crossing, you know, if you're doing a betting line on them, actually making it to the, to the 41st over. Look, it's been horrendous. The bowling, it was interesting against India that when the ball started moving, they did look much better up top. And that is their strength, right? We talked about that before this World Cup. I think Chris Wokes has bowled poorly even when the ball's gone straight. Like, his lines and his lengths haven't been very good. And Sam Curran was all over the place, right?
Yeah.
Sam Curran had an absolute shocker. I think he got away with good figures considering how badly he bowled at times. They're a bit unlucky with the top lifting as well. But the batting, I don't even know what to do with it. So you look at, again, their batting didn't collapse because they were slogging, right? So Ben Stokes' shot is the first one that is really like that. And to be honest, it was pretty clear what he was trying to do. He eventually picked the wrong ball, but he tried it, I think, 3 times before. And he was doing it with good cricket thinking in mind, right? So I think quite often, you know, we're not talking about that they've been reckless. And I went through all the balls before that game, and it's like, they haven't been that reckless. Sorry, everyone, they just haven't.
They haven't committed completely to their shots, I feel.
That's how I feel. Yeah, I know that's how Jos Buttler feels. I haven't talked to everyone, I haven't talked to him, but he said it publicly. But I haven't talked to that many people in the England camp. But that's how I feel, that they've been half-hearted. But it's incredible. If we stop this World Cup here, and we press reset, and we started from now, the exact same squads, there's no way we would guess that they would be in the position that we're in now again, right? Mm-hmm. Even knowing what we now know, we would still be like, no, they're still probably going to be at least a semi-final chance, if not a semi-finalist, right? It just doesn't make sense how, and you know, there's another team later that maybe is even worse than this, but it doesn't make sense how many of their players are out of form at the same time. But that's tournament cricket.
Yeah, and I mean, you're right when you say that even if we restart the World Cup, I'd probably have England as maybe not a sure shot semi-finalist, but maybe somewhere towards 5 or 6.
Yeah,
something like that for sure, because they're not that bad aside, but their results have just been devastatingly poor. It's been a horror show for England. And I'm keen to see whether or not they can make it to that Champions Trophy. But anyway, let's just take some of our comments. Keshav Huria is asking, can Afghanistan pull off a Kenya 2003? We've already discussed that, so you can maybe watch the recording afterwards. Sandhya Das is over here. He's saying that there's a lot of Ricky Ponting and Aidan Markram and Ijaz Ali, JJ Fadd, Nitish and Bhaswat Mohanty. Andy, Nitish again. Oh, lots of you guys are over here. That's great. So follow this channel, subscribe to it, and also subscribe to Jared's other channel, which has some of the video essays and other cool stuff, right? Let's talk about India, all right? Unbeaten in 6 games. And in their worst game of the tournament, they went on to win by 100 runs. And nearly another 100 for Rohit Sharma, sometime out in the middle for Sky as well, which I think is interesting. And then only 4 Indian batters scored in double digits and none of them scored 100, yet they got to 230. And you've got to say that at this point, they're looking quite invincible.
See, I'm not sure I'd say they're invincible because, I mean, you're right. They've won that game easily. Again, it's a bit like South Africa beating Pakistan in that chase, where it's like, if they played another team in this tournament, I don't think they win that chase. And I think if England's bowls be matched with, I don't know, functioning batting lineup at the moment, India might have been in for a real game there, right? Despite the fact I really rate their bowling, it would have been a completely different game. I thought the New Zealand game was interesting too. We have a little, and this might be 2003 Australia is a perfect example of, you look back and you're like, actually Australia gave the opposition quite a few chances to beat them. They just kept getting over the line. And so that actually proves that they were a better side than everyone else, which is a very fair way to look back on that tournament. They didn't lose a game in the next tournament, I think, either, did they? So, yeah. You know, so, or maybe, I can't even remember.
But just England. In 2019, up until the semi-finals, they just lost to England in 2015. They were unbeaten.
No, I'm talking about 2003, 2007. I can't remember it. But either way, they went a long time without losing a game. If you look at India, I thought that if New Zealand had wangled out one earlier wicket, that would have been a really interesting game. And if England had brought any batters to India, I thought that would have been a really interesting game. So I would say in some ways they look more invincible than they did before. But those are also two really good wins because I don't think they're at their best 100% for those two games. They had a really good side pushing them. They lost a bunch of wickets early on against England. They never quite recovered enough from that and then lost another bunch of wickets in the middle. And so that's kind of what you want. I was going to write, I ended up writing about Mohammad Shami, but I was really interested in the idea of that England game is probably exactly what India needed. Because even if they lost it, it wouldn't matter because England still weren't going to make the semifinals, right? And India were. So it wasn't going to change anything from that perspective. But them not making runs and then having to see that their bowling actually works under high pressure was really helpful. Maybe it would have been better if it was against a slightly better batting lineup who could have actually put some pressure back onto them as well. But New Zealand put pressure on them. So no, from that point of view, I think India are good, but yeah, I get your invincible thing, but I think we saw them struggle a little bit in the last couple of games, and that's exactly what you want.
Yeah, no, for sure. I think that there is a way to defeat India, but you'd probably have to get Kohli and Rohit early. I know that, you know, India has a stacked lineup, but when you get those two big guys up top, I feel like that might exert a lot of pressure. And lots of more comments over here. S. Roy has joined us, as has Puneet, and Day Walker, as is Arvind. So hello to all of you guys. I know you guys have lots of questions. Srinivas as well. So send a super chat and we'll take one on. Now, you mentioned India's bowling and how good they've been, right? They've been great. Bumrah wreaked havoc again with three wickets. And then Kuldeep got two versus England and he absolutely bamboozled Joss Butler. That's going to be like one of those framed moments. But Mohammad Shami, he was the one who stole the show and he followed up his five-wicket haul versus New Zealand with a fourfer versus England. And that Ben Stokes dismissal, of course, the setup and everything. And no one's forgetting that one anytime soon. So he's basically told Rohit and Rahul Dravid that you cannot drop me.
Except he did a very similar thing in 2019 and they did drop him. I think he's bowling better now than he did in 2019. I think it probably makes sense to keep him in the side. At this stage, he's jumped Siraj, hasn't he? He's looked better than Siraj. I know there's a couple of guys on our team who love Siraj, but I'm not sure he hasn't looked as good as Shami, let's be honest.
Yeah, and plus if Pandya's back, right, then someone has to go and Shami's not going for me.
Yeah, so, and, you know, from that perspective, I think if you've got Bumrah, Shami, and Kuldeep at 9, 10, 11, and you can bring Hardik back in for Sky, am I missing? Then you can bring Hardik back in for Siraj, can't you?
Yeah, you can.
Have I got my numbers right then?
Hardik back for Siraj, and maybe if Sky gets some more runs, he could replace Iyer and KL Rahul could go up at four. There's flexibility over here.
So they've got plenty of options there if they want. And they could keep Siraj in the side as well. That's the other option, of course, and then have that slightly weaker number eight.
Yeah, someone mentioned that in the comments, right? That Shami at eight, is it feasible? I think it's fine. I have no issues with it.
Someone was trying to tell me that Maharaj was a better number eight than Shardul Thakur on the comments today. And I'm like, well, not in one day cricket. I think that's okay.
Keshav Huria is saying, I'm afraid they'll sit Siraj for Shardul. They might. You never know. Just to add some batting depth.
I think they might just because what I said. But the other option is that you get Jadeja and Hardik to bowl their 10. But maybe they don't want that when Hardik comes back straight away. But I think three frontline bowlers without Siraj and Jadeja and Hardik means this Jadeja would then be listed to bat at 8, right? And Hardik was bowling pretty good beforehand. It doesn't give them much backup bowling, which is, you know, but then they've got Virat for that, right?
Yeah, of course. That's their seventh bowler, right arm fast. But I think it's interesting because Hardik is injured and we don't know if he'll be able to bowl the same way when he comes back. We've got Babar Rav Apte in the comments who's asking what's happening with the PCB. I've got that. Just stay tuned. We'll talk about that later. And yeah, all of you guys, thank you for all your questions. But we've got to talk about 10 teams and we have to do it in a certain time. So if you really want to ask a question, send us a super chat. At this point, I think we should probably take a break. And yeah, you'll catch us after this break shortly. You're watching Uncovered with Behram and Jared.
This is brought to you by Wicket Cricket Manager. Buy, sell and train with your team right on your phone.
Welcome back to episode 56 of Uncovered. You're with Behram and Jared. All right, another team who is making waves in India is the Netherlands. And they got an absolute hammering at the hands of Australia, but then they defeated Bangladesh, courtesy of yet another fighting innings from their captain, Scott Edwards. They've made it a habit to recover after losing quick wickets, which I think is phenomenal. And then Paul Van Meekeren, you know, he was an Uber Eats driver 4 years ago. And now he's taken a 4-wicket haul and won Netherlands a World Cup game. So if I'm the Netherlands right now, Jared, I'm probably thinking, hey, there's an opportunity to qualify for a Champions Trophy right now.
Yeah, they're probably too far back to think about the semi, aren't they?
Yeah.
Probably net run rate, especially with the Australian game. But yeah, I think you're right. I think if you look at them compared to Afghanistan, what Afghanistan's done is more replicable. Replicable? Yeah, I think that's
replicable.
I think that was the word I was trying to say. I'm not sure what I said, but
proper tongue twister.
Yeah, but you know, I do think that there's some issues there. I mean, I think it's their number two opener is averaging about the same as their number 11 at this stage, which is probably Van Meekeren. Yeah. And like, be fair to Meeks, not sure that's his not sure that's his strong point. They basically made runs out of the number three position and the number seven position, which is a remarkable pattern.
Max O'Dowd probably spends more time shampooing his hair than out there in the middle.
Look, he had two great World Cups. He was bound to have one where he slipped back a little bit. Unfortunately for him, it's the really long one. So no one will remember the other two when he was good. But yeah, I think I think they're going to aim for four wins, right? Who are their next two games against? I know I looked that up earlier.
They've got one versus Afghanistan, which they have a decent-ish chance of winning. If they can get power play wickets, they could catch them, you know? And Netherlands are really good
at power play. It's Afghanistan and England, right? So if they beat Afghanistan, they can cement the spot by beating England. If not, it might be a straight shootout between them and England in that last one.
Yeah. And Netherlands have defeated them, twice in T20 World Cups? So they've got that history behind them.
I should point out, this will be the first time that Stuart Broad's not involved. So maybe the Netherlands want to bring him over just to have him around. Look, if I was a bookie, that would be maybe the hardest game in this tournament. Let's say they beat Afghanistan or even just go close against Afghanistan, right? That would be the hardest game to come up with the odds of like, because you're like, well, it has to be England, has to be the massive favorite here. And then you're sitting there going, but I could get absolutely burnt here. But it would be a fascinating one to see how the bookmakers end up with that one.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And before we move on from the Netherlands, I want to talk about how Bastel Leda has now conceded the most amount of runs in an ODI innings, surpassing Adam Zampa, who very recently got there, and your hero, Victorian legend, Mick Lewis. How does that make you feel, Jared?
I feel sorry for Baz because Mick Lewis is a full-time bowler and Zampa is a full-time bowler. Rashid Khan, you know. So I think Martin Snedden had the record forever. I'm pretty sure Martin Snedden's an all-rounder. And I feel a little bit more sad for the all-rounders. Can't even remember back to Snedden, actually.
I feel sad for him because he took a couple of wickets, which both Zampa and Mick Lewis did not.
Yeah, no, exactly. And I think that's the thing with Baz the leader is he does always take wickets. I'm just having a look at Snedden. He's pretty much a specialist bowler, so I feel less sorry for him. But
do you know any other bowler who, like Baz de Leda, varies his length that much? It's either full or back of a length, then full, then back of the length. It's quite a trend at this point.
Cameron Green.
Mm.
Does my fucking head in. If you're 6'8", just bowl back of a length over and over again and no one will ever be able to hit you. And he's like, oh no, I'll try the Yorker. You don't need to try a Yorker, mate. You're 6'8". You don't ever need to pitch the ball up. I think with Baz, look, the truth with Baz is that he's probably at his best fifth bowler in a good team. And realistically, you'd love to have him with, let's say, I don't know, a young roll-off. I'm trying to think if they have anyone else coming through that's a bit like that. But, you know, a player who can bowl but is a batter. You'd love to have two of them in your top six and then Edwards as your number seven. And then you just use Baz the leader when you need to, when you don't. But essentially, because of the way they're lining up, Logan Van Beek is their top and tail bowler, and Van Meekeren's bowling in the middle, which means that Baz has to bowl at the death, and he's 23 and he's a batter, right? Like, with, yeah. What's his name that played for Afghanistan? Omazai. He had to do the same thing. And he's like, well, they're the reason they've got the two worst economies in this World Cup. It's because neither of them should be doing those jobs.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's a very interesting comparison, actually, Omazai and Bastaleda. We've got Krishna Bhatia in the comments, and he's asking how interesting Pakistan versus Bangladesh is going to be, given that the two teams have both been bad. We'll get to those two teams. Mm. We'll come to your question. But right now, I want to talk about Australia. Now, Travis Head is back, and he scored a quick fire ton in his very first game. He's having an amazing year. Take that broken wrist out, and he's been amazing, right? And David Warner, he scored back-to-back tons, and then, what, 81 off 65 versus New Zealand? So he's back in form. Rode his luck a bit, of course. There were instances where he could have gotten out, that run out versus the Netherlands, that drop catch versus Pakistan, but he made the most of those opportunities, and now he's one of the best batters in the tournament. And Glenn Maxwell, he broke Aidan Markram's record for fastest 100 ever in a World Cup, which was literally created at the start of this World Cup. And we worked on a piece together. Mm. And Maxwell was one of those names, right, that was mentioned in the piece. So I love that. And he's been bowling valuable overs as well. And he's a spin twin at this point with Adam Zampa, who after a terrible initial two games, you know, in the last four games, he's taken 15 wickets and is now the leading wicket taker at the World Cup amongst all bowlers, right? So this is very on brand for the Aussies, you know, poor start. And now all of a sudden they're looking like contenders.
Yes. I think it's funny. My Australian family and friends were going nuts. And I said, look, I think they are kind of a fringe top four team. Maybe, you know, at that stage, we didn't know how England were going to be. But I was like, I don't think they're that bad. And I think all these teams have flaws, but maybe the other teams are in slightly better form at the moment coming in. But then they had a better run, started playing better cricket. And, you know, we've seen a couple of times in this tournament where if the schedule sort of suits you, you look good. I still don't think they can play spin. If you look at the New Zealand game, didn't they make all their runs in the first 10 overs and the last 10 overs? And in the middle, they struggled. That's the same problem, right? But they're not horrible. I would say this. There are three batters. I mean, if Mitch Marsh can't make runs in the middle, then they're three batters, and you've mentioned them all. And they have two bowlers of their frontline bowlers who were bowling terribly. And then they've got a fifth bowler who's done well but couldn't bowl out against Pakistan, for instance.
Yeah.
They're not going to win this World Cup with three batters and two frontline bowlers, right? Cummins and Stark have to get better. And someone in the middle outside of Maxwell has to start to make runs, whether it's Smith or Inglis, or if they keep playing Labuschagne or Green or whoever it is. You can't win. They're just not good enough to win the World Cup with five players against India, South Africa, and New Zealand.
Yeah, I think that's sound logic. And interesting with Smith and Marnus, right? They got 50s versus the Netherlands, but they looked extremely poor versus New Zealand. And those conditions were pretty good for batting, right? So they should have gotten runs. And I mean, I don't know. Smith at four, Marnus at five, or either of those guys in the middle order, it just doesn't, you know, sound great to me. What's your take on it? Especially now because Head's back, he's going to open. And they're not going to drop Mitch Marsh at this point because he's gotten runs.
Yeah, I just don't see why you need Smith and Marnus. It's you've got insurance on your insurance at that point. And it may just be that they don't back Inglis enough. They think Inglis is a better option than Carey, but they just don't back him enough. And if that's the case, you know, I just don't think they're going to win the World Cup by having two players whose job is to make runs slower than normal. And that's not to say that Smith won't have a good innings. I don't know if Marnus can score a run a ball at this right at the moment in these conditions in the form he's in. You know, the Netherlands game he was fine, but that, you know, it needs a lesser attack for him to really get on top of against the best teams. I don't see the point, but they're invested in him.
Yeah, and you've got Cameron Green, you've got Stoinis, guys who can score quick, right? And Australia have been on that template now. You can tell by the way their openers are batting. So I don't know, it might be worth a shot, especially once you've qualified for the semis, which I think they will. But, you know, you take that Pat Cummins cameo out of the previous game, the New Zealand game, in which he brought out his Knight Riders form, struck like, what, 30 odd or 14 deliveries. Take that out. And Australia lose that game, right?
Yeah, exactly. And Cummins is so hit or miss with the bat. Like, I know he can be fantastic But he doesn't do it regularly. I mean, he needs the right kind of bowlers in the right kind of situation and the pitch to be in his favor. When he gets all that, it's actually very hard to bowl to him, but it doesn't happen that often. And, and that's what won them that game. Plus, what, maybe at the end, Nisha missed a couple of full tosses. I'm not saying he was the problem because he obviously almost pulled them home, but he missed a couple of full tosses that maybe another day Nisha hits and they lose. Right.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
I found it. I think we just did the power list and I know you put your team in and, you know, a few others put their team in. I think most of the people on the power list had Australia like at second or third and I had fourth. And the reason is I just don't think, and like New Zealand lost their last two games were more impressive to me, even in the loss to Australia than Australia were.
Yeah, that's interesting. I think I had Australia at second and that's only because I just don't trust South Africa chasing still. But we'll get to all that fun stuff. And before we actually go on a break, we've got some comments over here. Human Clone is here. Ijaz Ali says that if Australia win another trophy, he's going to quit watching cricket. So that'll be interesting. And Path Right Winger, he has a super chat, but his question is below that. So it's not the actual super chat. So if you can just click that.
Right Winger.
Yeah.
Here he is. I think this is it. Is this it?
Yeah. A question meant for the great cricketer, but you guys can answer. Sure. Yeah, we'll take this crap. Are fast bowlers like Wood and Freddie more soft-hearted and kinder than medium-fast peers, Curran and Ollie, due to Freudian reasons? Whoa. It's gotten philosophical. Did Freud do? No, Freud was interesting.
Look, there are some medium pacers who are quite... I don't know if he means the hold. Well, you know, short man syndrome. So... You know, there are a lot of medium fast bowlers who are very aggressive because they're making up for the fact they're not particularly fast. Merv Hughes would be maybe the best example of that. Maybe he was more on the fringe of fast bowling, but didn't do it. But no, there are plenty of evil fast bowlers out there. And I think it's individual personal preference, right? Maybe the great cricketers. I'm trying to think what Sam and Ian would say to that. But, when it comes down to it, I don't think I don't think Shahid Afridi is the most extravagant person in the world, right? Mm. So the way he plays cricket doesn't necessarily replicate the way he lives life. But then Jonathan Trott, the way he played cricket, completely represented how he lives life. So, it's a potential that the way you play cricket is not actually always a good representative of who you are. In that, like, I don't think Adam Gilchrist is a daredevil in real life. Sehwag seems a little bit like a centrist dad from his Twitter jokes, right? Although he obviously doesn't write them. But anyway, so I don't think it's fair to say that is all altogether true. But thanks for the super chat.
Yeah, and Pat Cummins recently said that he likes to see a bit of personality. And I don't think you'll find a lot of bowlers like Mark Wood who can bowl thunderbolts on the field and bark like a dog in the dressing room. But he's that guy.
I know a few bowlers who are dogs.
All right, then we'll be back shortly after this break. You're watching Uncovered with Behram and Jared. And yeah, stay tuned. Welcome back to episode 56 of the Uncovered podcast. You're with Behram and Jared. And I'll just look at the comment section real quick. Ritwik Gokale is here. And then Prateek Jha says hi. He's the good Prateek. The other Prateek is triggered by this flag. So if you're here, enjoy the show. But anyway, time to discuss the Kiwis. Now, they lost a thriller versus Australia, but they look mighty impressive in that chase. And Rachin Ravindra, he scored a career-defining 116. And I'd say that along with Gerald Coetzee, he would be the top breakout star of this World Cup. It's one hell of a feat to, seem like an upgrade on Kane Williamson, right?
Yeah, I think Coetzee goes for a lot of runs, by the way. But that's a conversation for you and I another time. But he's been fantastic. You said career defining. He didn't have the career before this. Right?
His career was at number 6 or 7.
But he wasn't even always in the side. He wasn't even, he hadn't even defined that yet, right? Look, he's been absolutely fantastic. I want to look at a lot more of him before I decide that he's absolutely the real deal. But I like the way he plays spin, his ability to sweep. He can use his feet quite well, uses the crease at times. I think at the moment, I think the best thing you can do against quick bowls is handle the short ball. Hmm. He does that fantastically. I do think if you build a trench outside off stump, and teams haven't done that enough to him, I'm a little bit interested to see how he might go against that. But he's been fantastic. And, you know, he's been so good with the bat that I haven't even moaned about his bowling. And I hate his
bat. Yeah, yeah. I remember when you were covering the England versus New Zealand series, you were moaning about his bowling a lot. And Athers has likened him to Brian Lara, right? Is that too much?
Yeah, very similar bowlers.
All right.
I don't think he's like Lara. Because, he's taller than Lara. He's got a slightly different... Lara's mean skill was he's about as quick on his feet against spin as anyone. And then I think he was more overtly attacking and had different gears than Ravindra. I don't think Ravindra's going to be anything like Lara, but he's a left-hander. And as I said, the short ball and multiple options against spin are the first things I look for in an international batter at the moment, and he's certainly got that.
Yeah, and he's pretty flamboyant as well, quite an aesthetically pleasing batter. Mm-hmm. And yeah, hundreds versus England and Australia, a big hundred, so good for him. But anyway, at this point, surely. Daryl Mitchell also looked good for his 50. And then Jimmy Neesham, New Zealand's nearly there, man. He is that guy, right? And I was surprised not to see a tweet because he was batting at 58. He looked like he's going to win them the game. Then, like you mentioned, he got out on a full toss, which really shouldn't have happened. Or well, he missed a few full tosses, that's for sure. He might not have gotten out on a full toss.
I can't remember how he went out. Didn't he get run out again? Wasn't it like the World Cup?
It was. He did get run out again. There you go. But you've got to feel for Jimmy. But at the same time, I feel like he's proven his worth over here because there's experience and he is a big hitter. And I'd probably at this point take him over Chapman because of the buffer overs.
To be fair, Chapman, I'm not sure Chapman's much at this stage, much worse bowler than Ravindra if they gave him the ball. Mm-hmm. But they both bowled the same thing. So they're going to go with Ravindra, who's a bit quicker through the air.
Daryl Mitchell, James Neesham, Rachin Ravindra, Chapman. Rank those bowlers.
Glenn Phillips.
Of course, golden arm Glenn. Three wickets in that game.
So yeah, I just think that I think Chapman is an all round. Well, I should say I think Chapman is a better cricketer and should have had a much better career than he has had so far, and might still have a huge breakout where suddenly everyone's like, "Is that the guy that was always in their squad, never did anything?" Mm-hmm. But I think right now, when they had Neesham back in the side, I just felt that power was important. And maybe, again, looking at the rest of their batting lineup, some of this is kind of depends on Glenn Phillips because he hasn't been batting particularly. He's been making runs, but way slower than I would expect him to make runs. Mm-hmm. If Glenn Phillips turns into Glenn Maxwell, which is what he can do, then Chapman I'm okay with. But if Glenn Phillips can't get to that level, then it makes sense to have Neesham there.
Yeah, and I think Phillips in the one score that he has was aided by Afghanistan's catching. So there's that bit as well. But I'm a big Glenn Phillips fan. So I want to see him play every game. Anyway, we got a couple of super chats.
I'm not saying drop Glenn Phillips. What I'm saying is, like, if Glenn Phillips is going nuts the way he can go, then Chapman makes more sense rather than Neesham. Whereas if Phillips isn't getting... Phillips could have a strike rate of 140. And it just hasn't worked for him in this World Cup. And if that's the case, then it makes more sense to have Neesham rather than Chapman.
Yeah, and if Rachin continues to bat the way he's batting, Daryl Mitchell, I trust, with strike rate for the most part, even though he caught some flack from Simon Dool and everything. You've got Neesham and Phillips and potentially Chapman. So, things are not looking that bad for the Kiwis. But let's take these super chats before we move on to, Pakistan's next. So, let's take these super chats.
Oh, super chats. Sorry. That means I have to do something, doesn't it? And now I understand why you were saying that so aggressively at me.
Oh, Pratik Jha sent a super chat? Yes, no, he didn't. He did? Oh, he did. For Behram, in a Crick Info Mag article, a teammate said about Iftikhar that he can't bat, can't ball, can't field. This was during his first coming. What changed? Was the teammate being cruel? Seems like he's not liked much in the team even now. No. Iftikhar is very much loved. Everyone thinks he's a pop culture icon. He's got this cult following at this point. I don't know if you've come across Iftimania. And I think he's an improved cricketer. Look, when I saw Iftikhar first, back when Misbah brought him in the test team in the 2016 Test series versus England, I pretty much thought the same. I was like, he's a bits and pieces player, to quote Sanjay Mandrekar, but he's more than that now. He's the one guy in Pakistan's 11 who has big boy power. Doesn't seem like anyone else does. And his bowling has been better than the other spinners. And I've always trusted him as a fielder. I think he's a good slip fielder and really good in the deep. So I don't know who this former cricketer or teammate was, but he's got this wrong for sure.
Well, it depends on when that was though, because to be honest, I've said this before, I worked for his agent and they were trying to get him work. And I could see that there was a really talented player in there from the data, but also I'm going, how do I sell this guy, right? Like, he wasn't making any runs. He didn't bowl that often. You know, he was weird. In the last 2 years, he's a completely different player. And, you know, I think that is, you know, very, very fair that he's done, that he gets the credit that he should. And he's certainly been absolutely fantastic of recent times, but he wasn't fantastic for a long period as well.
Yeah, for sure. And I think it's the T20 stuff that's really brought him into the limelight. Surit Guha says, have we peaked too early? Hashtag India. I think India should win this. And yeah, let's just hope they don't have that bad half hour of cricket or something, because that's the only thing that can stop them. So
the whole peak too early. So we get, asked this question a lot. Always when I'm, would you prefer your team was playing worse now?
Yeah.
Right. I mean, how do you, as someone who just lived through two championships for my teams, the Denver Nuggets and Collingwood in the AFL, right? That I understand the idea, and I understand why people ask these questions, but it's like, actually, like when Denver started playing very poorly, and even when Collingwood was, you know, getting into so many close games, I would rather have them been winning a lot easier, right? Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, Nuggets have started this season, they're 3-0. They look like they'll never lose another game at the moment. Much more confident with that, even though they are 79 games away from the playoffs, than it would be if they were struggling, right? But it doesn't matter anyway, because you can't control form.
Yeah. Right?
You can do little tweaks and maybe you can get people up at the right time and, you know, Olympic athletes and that sort of stuff. But ultimately, you cannot control form. So this is just something that people shouldn't worry about as much as they do. And I understand why they do.
Yeah, that's fair. Question for both. If an umpire turns down an LBW call, assuming an inside edge, and it's sent upstairs where no edge is detected, but there's an umpire's call, should it still be considered an umpire's call? That's a fantastic question. But as things stand, yeah, I would say it should be.
So if an umpire turns down an LBW, assuming an inside edge, and it's sent upstairs where no edge is detected, but there's an umpire's call, should it be considered an umpire's call? I'm very confused here because...
He might be alluding to the Haris Rauf LBW versus Shamsi, because I think the commentators were talking about how the umpire might have thought there's an inside edge, but that's just conjecture, right? The commentators aren't talking to the umpire. He could have thought it's sliding down leg. So I don't know about that one. I think that...
Yeah, I mean, I think if the umpires pass on that message, that's fine. I would have to look up the whole umpire's call thing, but I'm not really that worried about it in this particular case. I think we've got a couple more, actually.
Yeah, we got tons of super chats. You guys want us to go long today. VK, India and Sunrisers Hyderabad fan over here. Really don't understand the hype around Glenn Phillips. Any stats, performance, you have to back your opinion on Glenn Phillips. Well, I'm going to go on a rant over here. Man can bat, hit big. He can bowl, has a golden arm. He's a terrific fielder. He can keep wicket. Why would you not want to have a player like Glenn Phillips in your team? That's just too much for one person.
I don't think anyone should be... I don't think anyone should be looked down upon because of how they go for SRH, because there are plenty of reasons why that goes to shit. But T20s, he's got T20 at the Nationals, got an average of 32 and a strike rate of 146, right? That's from 63 T20 Internationals. So if you're asking if I've got any stats, look, I don't think he's 26. I first started watching him when he was about 2021. He is one of those next level players. If he goes on to have like a Heinrich Klassen breakout, I would not be surprised at all. His power, his striking ability, his footwork, the way he thinks about the game, it's huge. Now, he might not bring any of that together. There's a lot going on in his mind, but you have a look at him right across you know, he averages over 40 in first-class cricket. I don't think he's as suited to one-day cricket in general, but he's still going at 32 with a strike rate of 90. I think the biggest issue for him is he hasn't had a big tournament, include the IPL in that, but he hasn't had a big World Cup. And I think that's an issue for him, and may not be pressure, just could be just dumb luck. But I promise you, if you see Glenn Phillips in full flight, you will understand why New Zealand keep picking him and everyone else. And if you think about Glenn Maxwell, players who play that way sometimes just take a little bit longer to develop anyway. And they do need more special care. And if you compare it to Mark Chapman, I think Mark Chapman's a very good cricketer and could go on to have a fine career with New Zealand. But Mark Chapman's ceiling is nowhere near Glenn Phillips. Glenn Phillips' ceiling is rare air, right? If he gets it to work, it is a different level than most players can even dream of.
Yeah, I think that's it for the Super Chats because I believe there was one more, but I think Surit was just saying that he loves the podcast.
No, we did Surit. I think we did Surit. He sent
us money twice, but his second message was just love for us. So that's great. Oh, well. We love you too, Surit. Yeah. And All Things Cinema podcast clarifies that he wasn't referring to the Haris Rauf dismissal. So yeah, sorry about that, but I think we answered your question. And maybe we'll have footmarks on umpire's call one day. You know, you never know. We might.
I think I've already done an episode on it in general. I think a lot of people just misunderstand what umpire's call is. Umpire's call exists because there is a lot of grey area around the prediction software. And essentially, Hawkeye are the ones who are very happy to have umpire's call. And they're the ones telling you that the technology is not that great when it comes to little changes. So a perfect example was who was given out in the, was it Baba? No. Was it a South African who was given out LBW?
Oh, Rassie. Rassie was given out, which really did not look like LBW at all, but it was two umpire calls.
Yeah, but was that the one where they put up the wrong decision, then put up the right decision?
It was missing for like a fraction of a second, and then they changed the thing.
So the perfect explanation of this is that when they first put it in where they thought it hit his pad, they got it wrong. And that suggested it was missing. When they updated that, it was hitting, right? That is why we have umpires call, because we're actually saying, well, the umpires also have information here, and we want to put those two things together. And it's a really good thing, but it's never been explained correctly by commentators. Most commentators don't understand DRS, right?
Yeah, and I think Harbhajan Singh was quite vocal, and a lot of people were saying even if it hits like a little bit of the wicket, it should be out. But then again, there's technological deficiencies over here. So
exactly. So Hawkeye would tell you that the reason that isn't the case is they are not that sure on their technology, right? Hmm. It's got a predictive element, and the cricket pads crumple. So it's actually hard to tell exactly where the ball hits. And so in that situation, if it hit there, it was missing. But if it hit there, it was going on to hit the stumps. That's the difference, right? So anyway, who we got? Bangladesh? Let's do Bangladesh.
We got Bangladesh. You want to do them first? I've got Pakistan and South Africa as well.
Bangladesh, I think they've been the worst team in this World Cup. Really disappointed with them. I thought they were fantastic in that first game. I would say they have one player at the moment who is in form, which is Mahmudullah, and they're keeping him so far down the innings that it doesn't matter, right? And I refuse to talk about a team who won't actually promote the guy who can bat ahead of all the other people who can't at the moment. So they're out. They're done. All right, who you got? Pakistan? Yeah. All right. Yeah. So I don't know what to say about Pakistan.
I'll frame it for you. Right now, they played well in their last game, better than they have before. The bowling kind of came to the party. The Pacers got late wickets. They got Pakistan back into the game. True. But Pakistan fell short by the barest of margins, as Ian Smith would put it, one wicket, right? Lots of heartbreaks. And first time ever, Pakistan's lost four World Cup games on the bounce, which I think is important. And I think one of the main reasons, at least in this loss, was that, look, few of Pakistan's batters got starts. Saud and Babar got 50. Shadab got 40-odd. I think Rizwan got 31. And then Nawaz and Ifti got like 20s, something like that. None of those guys took it deep. None of those guys went big. Like Markram got 91 for South Africa. If one of those guys in Pakistan got that score, Pakistan could have potentially batted out 50 overs. And had they batted out 50 overs, they would have had 20, 30, some sort of runs more to play with. Could have won the game, right?
Yeah. Yeah, no, they could have. I mean, I almost think any other team that South Africa would have played would have beaten them in that situation. But Pakistan's middle overs bowling is so pathetic that they couldn't actually continue to chip away. A one decent spinner wins that game, right? And I don't mean like Zampa or Santner would be great, but Aaron Dutt might have won that game, right? Like,
Aaron Dutt is better than all spinners in Pakistan right now.
Do you know what I mean? Adil Rashid would have won that game. Maybe Moen might have been more handy in that situation.
Yeah.
Right.
Who knows? He probably could get one to rip properly. And
at least economy wise, he might have kept it quiet. So look, they're not good. It's really interesting to see if they can't bat in a free way that allows them to outscore teams, they have to then actually find people who can take wickets for them again in those middle overs. you could argue, and I wouldn't throw away these three bowlers, but you could argue that as it currently stands, there's no way you can come to another tournament with Rizwan and Shadab together. And Usama is not ready for international cricket at this level at the moment. He's not accurate enough. But all three of them are good cricketers. And, you know, it's okay to, they're playing shit at the moment. And so, you know, maybe you have to look at other options. But none of them are duds, right? And Shadab, if Shadab gets his hips fixed, and we saw what he could do with the bat, you know, perhaps the best version of Shadab is getting concussion after he's made runs and letting Usama Mir ball.
Yeah. I think Usama Mir actually did well compared to his previous performances. And you said Rizwan, you met Nawaz, and you always mess up Nawaz's name.
Oh my God, I hate those two people.
You've done this like five different times.
It's become my new fucking Chris Lynn, Chris Green, Cameron Green thing. I don't know how these things get into my brain backwards. Oh, it fucking does my head in. Anyway,
stuff that's happened off the field, actually. I don't know if you've got any of this, but the PCB issued a press release to support Pakistan's team because they still have four matches to go. And then they said that, oh, by the way, we're going to assess the team's performance afterwards. And we'll take a decision in the best interest of Pakistan cricket. Find out, after they've thrown the captain and the management under the bus, we find out that they haven't paid the players for 4 months. And now Inzamam has resigned. So everything's capitulating in Pakistan cricket.
Also, they did that stupid thing that teams always do where they're like, we're going to go and talk to a bunch of older players and they'll be able to help us sort it out. If they could have sorted it out, you would have hired them in the first place. What are you talking about? I hate when they do that. Anyway, what's your South Africa one?
Well, Anayo Samuel says, I stayed up late to see Jared's analysis of Bangladesh and he just finishes it in 20 seconds. I'll extend it a bit for you. Don't look at the power list
as well, because I didn't say much more about them. I'm really pissed off with Bangladesh, because what am I supposed to analyze? Everyone's playing shit.
I mean, barring Mahmudullah, who now has three World Cup hundreds, there's nothing to write about. And also, Shakib left mid-tournament to go meet his mentor back to Dhaka. That was also weird.
It's ridiculous. The whole thing is ridiculous.
Yeah, I don't see them making it to the Champions Trophy, that's for sure. All right, let's take the Super Chat and then let's go to South Africa. Orwell Tutenbacher, love that name. We should have just let team staff look at replays and decide whether to use DRS or not. Also saves time.
Would it save time, though? Because I don't think it would actually save time. Because it's hard to explain, but essentially, certain grounds have a 5-second delay feed that the players see. In that situation, they'd at least be able to look up quickly. But if not, someone would actually have to replay it for the players, and it wouldn't make sense. Also, it's just, I don't know, I think part of the skill of it, go back to England when they were really good at it, is they had a really good system in place and they understood it. And you look at, I can't remember, there was a team I was watching the other day and I was like, they're just going to review this because they want to review it. Like, there's no thinking here or anything like that. They deserve to be penalized.
Yeah. All right, South Africa, quickly then. Two wins out of two this week. Thriller versus Pakistan, which they'll have really enjoyed winning because they were chasing. 300s in this World Cup for Quinton de Kock. I'm calling him Tripton de Kock and then Quadrant de Kock till he becomes Quinton de Kock in this World Cup. That would be like a great evolution. And then, I don't know, Klaassen got a 90-odd of 49 balls versus Bangladesh. Markram has been amazing this tournament, right? He scored that fastest 100 before Maxwell broke it. Then he got, 60-odd versus Bangladesh in a very important 91 versus Pakistan. You've got Jansen, you know, priceless batting at number 7 and also new ball bowling, getting like heaps of bounce. And Pakistan was certainly troubled by that. And then I know that we have to have a chat about Gerald Coetzee, but I think that he's been phenomenal. And both him and Jansen, if I were to make a mid-tournament team of the tournament, and I know we were talking about this in our work chat as well, I'd have both those guys, right? Because I think they've been mad impressive. And when I look at South Africa, you know, they even got David Miller, by the way. Great middle order, great top six. When I look at the Proteas, I think that this is probably the only team right now who could give India a proper run for their money.
If they bat first.
Yeah, if they bat first, of course.
If they bat first, they could give India a run for their money. If they bat second, they could give England a run for their money.
Yeah, basically. Or lose to the Netherlands.
I thought they were pathetic against Pakistan. And I was actually annoyed that they won that game, because I think, I thought if they lost that game, they just have to admit that this is a thing and actually deal with it. They were pathetic against Bangladesh for not fucking chasing. They should have just been like, we're not going to, there's no point making the semifinals and then hope everything comes together, right? You actually need to be in a position where you are ready to go. And against Bangladesh, it would have been perfect for them to go, let's just chase. Let's see what we can restrict them to and then do it. And then against Pakistan would have been worked out perfect. Would have meant they had two or three chases in a row, I think it would have been at that point, right?
Yeah.
And at that stage, I'd have to be like, well, we know what we're doing now, one way or another. And Temba Bavuma comes up after the Pakistan game and goes, yeah, we don't really know what we're doing in chases. Hmm. You had 4 years. You had 40 years to work this problem out.
Well, to be fair, Temba did say that he was disappointed that South Africa won't get to play the World Cup qualifiers because that would have given them good practice. So I'm not going to hold this against him, right? But the chasing definitely seems to be a problem. The bowling attack looks good to me. You bring in Rabada into this, right? Jansen, mm-hmm. Rabada, new ball. And then you've got Coetzee for the middle overs, who really, I think he's filled in for Nokia really, really well. And then also, how do you drop Shamsi now? 4 wickets, right? And it is India. You do play spinners over here. So would you perhaps go with both him and Maharaj along with those three guys and drop Ngidi?
Ngidi's been really good. It's funny. I looked at the numbers of the middle overs the other day, and I'm not sure Ngidi hasn't been better than Coetzee. He hasn't taken the wickets, but he's going at a really good economy and taking a couple of wickets. Coetzee is getting hammered, but taking lots of wickets. I think Ngidi is more, with Rabada back in the side, I don't think Coetzee is as important, if that makes sense. Just because of the things that Rabada does very, very well that overlap a little bit more with Coetzee. But he's been taking masses of wickets, so maybe you just go with that.
Am I hearing that you will play Shamsi?
Well, I think for me, I would just look at the pitch and decide based on the pitch, right? And I think that's the best way forward for them. If they think there's going to be anything in it for the spinners, bring Shamsi in and then you're doing great. And if not, you can go all in with the pace bowling if you want to. They're in a great position from that situation. First innings, I have no problem with them. Second innings, they're basically England or Bangladesh.
Yeah, no, I cannot disagree based on what we've seen. And yeah, I would play Shamsi too. And it'll be interesting to see how their bowling attack fares. And I think Babar Rav Apte says, Behram, did you see Temba celebration after the win? I did. And I saw this tweet which said that, oh, Lungi Ngidi's son is so happy with that win. So I thought that was really funny. And also, there was this other thing. Yeah, someone asked in the comments what I think of Gerald Coetzee's celebration. No problems at all. I love that. I love the fire in his belly. I think it's really, really fun to watch. But yeah, anyway, I think... Much. Yeah, yeah. And I think that probably sums up this episode of Uncover. Thank you to everyone in the comment section and for all your super chats. It really helps us. Also, subscribe to this channel and Jared's other channel in which you want probably more detailed analysis on specific things. You can watch Jared glow in all different colors right now if you're actually not listening in and are on YouTube. But thanks to everyone for joining us. We'll come back next week with episode 57 of the Uncovered podcast. That's it from Behram and Jared today. Goodbye.
Thanks for listening. This podcast has an ad-free version via Patreon, where there are many other extras as well, including a Discord channel. There's a link to those in the show notes. Please review, subscribe, and tell all your friends about our show. Word of mouth is the best way of making our podcast grow. If we had a guest on, chances are their socials are in the show notes. Please support everyone who comes on this show. I am Jared Kimber, and this is my network. But we also have hosts and co-hosts like Bharat Sundaresan and Behram Kazi. This network is overseen by Nick McCorriston. Each episode is produced by Ishit Kuberka at Sound Potion Studio. The team from 42 help us out with the video side. Orajoti Senapayu and Maida Akam, both producing podcasts, while Mukunda Bandredi is the head of our YouTube content. Do you make content but don't want to listen to yourself talk? Well, I get that. Memento FM's AI does all the listening for you. It picks out the highlights and it makes you sound far more amazing than you really are. Embrace Memento FM today.